ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. Two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
The world. Gangsta no live in a tenement yard. No. Hood boy no live in a tenement yard. Too much watchy. Too much so. Them chatty.
Fuck all this pretty Sean Carter shit, nigga. Ho. Sean was on that gospel shit. I was on the total fucking opposite shit. Stuff $1 million in a sock drawer. That's a war chest in case you need your chest knocked off. Y'all be talking crazy under them IG pictures. So when you get the hell, you tell them Blanco sent you. I can't take no threats, I got a set of twins. Those were just some words you'll never hear again. For the final time, you don't believe these fools. I never seen a worker rock so many jewels. I never seen a runner with so many cars. Y'all couldn't stop me, you're not as tough as you say you are. My advice is just don't be too nice to niggas. Just set the price so niggas and live your life, my nigga. Once upon a time in the projects, Sean was in flight mode, I bought a Pyrex. I was in fight mode, oh now it's fuck me, mijo. I was moving them kilos, help you move your peoples. Sometimes you need your ego, gotta remind these fools who they effing with, and we got effing too. Before we had A&Rs, we had ARs too. We the only ones really moving like y'all say y'all do.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 166 of the report. And right now, we rocking out to some of that new Jay-Z, man. 444. Rock out with your boy.
Don't you ever forget. Don't you never forget. Jigga got the shit popping. I pulled out the pot when we was out of options.
Gangsta no live in a tenement yard. Hood boy no live in a tenement yard. Too much watchy. Them so. Too much chatty.
Fuck all this pretty Sean Carter shit, nigga, ho. Put that drum in your ear, don't get smirked. I Bobby Smurda, anybody you heard of.
Yes, indeed, man. Yes, indeed. We are back. Episode number 166 of the report. I am your host, Mr. Span, and yeah, man, we chilling on a Sunday evening. Late on a Sunday evening, right? Let me turn this down. All right. I've been banging that out since it came out, man. Like, pretty much since it first came out, I've been rocking that real hard, man. That 444 goes really motherfucking hard. I probably listened to it all the way through probably like 6 times now. Right? Just let it run. It's only 10 tracks, man. So it doesn't really run all that long, but like it's a really good album. And we're going to talk about it in a bit. But before I do, of course, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit me up on the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I play them on the show, respond on the show. You can also call in live while we're doing the show, man, on Crowdcast. So go on Crowdcast, subscribe to the show on Crowdcast, and you can call in at the hotline, bro, or sis, or whoever. You can call in while we're doing the show live, bro, on crowdcast.io. So if you go there, you can watch these shows live, and you can call in while we're doing it. Also, you can email me at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Man, leave those emails. Of course, I'll read those emails here live on the show as well. Chop it up with me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span, so go ahead and follow me there. We can chop it up throughout the week. Also, man, iTunes and our Stitcher reviews are very much welcome. Very much welcome. I appreciate everybody who goes out and take the time to do that. As a matter of fact, I got a couple reviews that were I was made aware of that I didn't know I had at the time. It took a while, man. It takes a while. Like with Stitcher and stuff like that, it takes a while for a lot of that stuff to post. And I got a couple of I had a couple of reviews that were left on iTunes, and one of the homies actually let it be known that like he sent me the iTunes review through Canada. So I didn't know I had it until he put me up on, like, he left it on Canada's, you know, iTunes. I don't like it. But yeah, you know how it goes. And I'm gonna go ahead and read this now, man, because I appreciate everybody who takes the time to go ahead and leave those reviews. And I know I saved it. Jesus Christ. Let me see if I can pull this up. There it is. All right. Will in Toronto, man, left a 5-star review for your boy, man. Shout out to Will in Toronto. And Will writes in 5 stars. This is a very funny, informative, and insightful podcast. Mr. Span covers everything from politics, pop culture, and sports. Do yourself a favor and hit the subscribe and add this to your podcast rotation, man. Will in Toronto, thank you so much, brother. I really appreciate you spreading the word, putting on for everybody to let them know that you fuck with us over here at the Span Report, man. I really do appreciate that. There was also another review that was left on iTunes, and I know I saved that one as well. Let me see if I can pull this one up. And this one is from, was that Steiner Marie 84? And she says, if you're not listening, you're missing out. 5 stars. This review is long overdue, but after listening to the last episode, I had to leave a 5-star review. After catching Mr. Span on TBGWT, shout out to Rod and Karen over at the Black Guy Who Tips, I had to check out his show. Next thing I know, I'm laughing out loud while in the middle of Sephora. Okay. Not only will you get a chuckle, you also get some great insightful commentary on today's topics from a great perspective. An added bonus is listening to Span being a former Detroiter always makes me feel a little closer to home here on the West Coast. Check this guy out. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. Steiner Marie. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, sister. I appreciate that. Real talk. And I hope you continue to listen, and I can continue to help you feel closer to home, man. Like, I ain't been out to the West in a long time. I think the last time I was even close to the West Coast was like the summer of 94 and shit. I stayed out there for like a summer with my aunt in Las Vegas. So yeah, man, I appreciate everybody who goes out and leave those 5-star reviews, man. Again, the 5-star reviews really do help the show grow, man. So I appreciate anybody who goes out and takes that 5 to 10 minutes, however long it takes, to leave those 5-star reviews, man. Real talk. Yeah, but you can also, outside of the 5-star reviews, go ahead and you can go to the website, MrSpan.com. It's actually thespanreport.com, right? Go to www.thespanreport.com, and all the podcasts are available there. You can vote in the polls on the podcast there. You can leave comments there. Everything, man. You can donate to the show on there. You can buy t-shirts. Everything's pretty much available there at thespanreport.com, man. So go there for all of your Span Report needs, man. Yeah. Yeah, man. So, like I said, I got the show started or whatever. We came in listening to some Jay-Z, and initially I wasn't going to even talk about this. Let me stop lying. Of course I was going to talk about this, but you know, it was funny, man. Like, I had like kind of let go of my Tidal subscription. He was like, you know what? I'm paying the $20 for the Tidal. Excuse me. And one of the things about it was, I was subscribed to both Tidal and Google Play Music, right? And as much as I like Tidal for like the sound quality, because I always hit the hi-fi account, and I really like the sound quality that comes out of the streams from Tidal. But I started noticing like a lot, like there wasn't as much music available on Tidal as with services like Google Play Music or with Apple Music or maybe even Pandora or Spotify. The catalog just wasn't as deep as you would like them to be. There were songs that I had access to before that I no longer had access to. Like, you could tell they were like faded out. I had playlists with songs faded out on them. So, you know, I kind of dropped my subscription. I'm like, you know what, man, I'm a rock out with my Google Play Music for a little while, because I had, you know, with all these streaming services, there are their perks. So I always had like my 50,000 songs that were saved in the cloud that I got access to through Google Play Music, but also the commercial free YouTube is also pretty good, because you get that free with the Google Play Music also. But actually having access to a lot of this music, you know, when it comes down the pike, man, I was paying, what, $7 a month, because I got on it when it first came out. So I got that for like forever, that rate. But the 444 only came out on Tidal, And so I said, well, when it came out on Tidal, I said, you know what? I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to just go ahead and grab my subscription again and listen to it. And that was probably the best thing I've done in a while, man, because that album is flames, yo. Like, that 444 goes hard, man. And it's interesting, man. Like, when a project like this comes out and people are raving about it, people are having a good time with it, people are kind of, I guess you would say, they're starved for good music. They're starved for things that they like. And so it was, you know, one of those things where, like, yo, in much the same way that our sisters get out, you know, kind of get their life to when Beyonce drops a new project, you saw a whole lot of brothers out here dropping J quotables, man. Like, your timeline was full with J quotables from tracks off of this album. And I was one of those people that was doing that, man. And it was interesting because one of the things I remember, I think it was a couple months ago, where, you know, there were, you know, kind of rumors or whatever that Jay-Z was going to put out a Lemonade type of album. Right. And I don't think anybody really understood what that really meant. Right. Like, you know, it wasn't like you wanted him to piggyback off of Beyonce or counter what Beyonce was saying. I don't think anybody was looking for that. But I think what we got was an album that was open, that was honest, that was showing his current situation. And he's rapping about how he's living in life today. Like, basically, you're getting the Jay-Z of today. You're not getting the Jay-Z of 96. You're not getting the Jay-Z of 2000. You're not getting the Jay-Z of 2010. You're getting Jay-Z of 2017, 40-something-year-old man, married with three kids, and openly acknowledging his faults as a man, openly acknowledging his mistakes. Right. You know, and, you know, some folks, you know, all they got out of the album was like, oh, so Jay really did cheat on Beyonce? Like, this nigga. Like, and there was that. But then there was like the revealing of his mom being a lesbian and have to pretend to be someone else for all of these years and having to deal with the pain of that and self-medicating with drugs and things like that because she couldn't be who she was and not being able to show it to the world. You know, there was the Jay-Z, like the infidelities and what he risked by cheating on his wife and like the way his life could have been altered if she decided to leave. You know what I'm saying? There's also the black empowerment, you know, group economics sort of message that was also present in this album. And there was a little bit of youth scolding, so to speak. There was some direct shots at some folks, like, say, for instance, Kanye West. You know, there was a shot made towards him and folks actually piggybacking off of, like, what was that, Nicki Minaj and Meek Mill throwing subliminal shots at each other about 444, man. Like this whole thing, man, I've been able to listen to this album and thoroughly enjoy it. A lot of people have been able to listen to this album and thoroughly enjoy it. It's been a really good dope. I feel like this is early, but I would consider this some of Jay-Z's best work. Not probably the best, but some of his best work, man, because of how open, honest, and vulnerable he is on this album. And not only that, man, like I said this on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm kind of wondering if this is something find itself to be true sometime later on. But there was a time where Jay-Z was sort of a trendsetter, right? And Jay-Z, like, you know, he was wearing the jerseys and everything. Now, mind you, your man Span, when he was a teenager, was wearing jerseys all the time, any motherfucking way, because I had a hoop dream and you could not have told me I wasn't going to the NBA. That didn't happen. But all of a sudden, like, the throwback jerseys came up and, like, everybody was wearing throwback jerseys. Jay-Z kind of helped make that popular. Then there was the whole thing about, you know, the, what's that, wearing button-ups. Now, all of a sudden, the guys start throwing away their jerseys and putting on button-ups and jeans and shit, you know, trying to switch it up, you know, and he's been an influencer in pop culture for a while. And one of the things that I got away from this album was I'm wondering if Jay-Z could possibly make it cool for dudes to actually stand up and be men and say, you know what, I fucked up, I'm sorry. Right? Like, is that possible? Can dudes take that message away from this album? Can dudes look at Jay-Z in the position that he's in and recognize the growth that we've seen over the course of the last, what, 20 years since Jay-Z's come on the scene? Or 21 years? Well, it was 96 when Reasonable Doubt dropped. It was 21 years ago. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, with hip-hop, you know, we always kind of look at it like this is a young person's game. Like, and this is probably one of the only genres of music where we don't necessarily appreciate growth in the ways that we should, right? Like, we're trying to push our artists out of the door after they reach a certain age. And here we get an album from someone who's been in the game for at least 20 some odd, like 20 years since we've known him in the public. And we've seen his growth, where you go from Not For Nothing, Never Happened, I'll Be Forever Mackin', to, you know, trying to figure out, like, yo, all I had to do was say I was wrong. I asked Solange on, all I had to say was I was wrong. Like, to see that sort of maturation, man, and being open and honest in this album. Like I said, man, I've listened to it about 5 or 6 times. It's a really dope album. I implore anybody to listen to it when they get the chance. Now, another thing I want to talk about for those when it comes to get a chance to listen to it. Now, interestingly enough, I saw a bunch of people who were complaining about it only being available on Tidal, right? And I get it. Like, you want to be able to, like, listen to it on the service that you subscribe to, or you want to be able to go purchase it on in a hard copy or whatever. You're not really appreciating the fact that he's only doing this on Tidal. Now, he's not the only person who has an exclusive deal with whatever streaming service. Like, Drake does an exclusive deal with Apple for his music, and a lot of artists, like Beyonce, most of her music is on Tidal, so you have to get Tidal in order to listen to them. Yeah, they're going to come out with hard copies later on down the line, but it was funny to, like, kind of watch people try to bootleg it and get frustrated and say it publicly that they couldn't bootleg it because of the file format that the shit came in, right? Like, yo, at one point, do we just, like, acknowledge, like, hey man, like, just pay for the shit. Just pay for it. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Just pay for it. You know what I mean? And I've spoken about this before, man. Like, we've gotten to a point where, like, we're so entitled that we don't even feel like we have to pay for shit anymore. Like, this, like, these people put out work, and folks don't even want to compensate them for their work. But it was another thing that I thought was interesting too. And that was, of course, because everybody's talking about Jay-Z and they're talking about 444 and everybody's having a good time and they're doing the quotables and everything else. Like, you're going to have that special set of people, that segment of the population who want you to pay attention to them. So all of a sudden, like, you're going to see, and I was trying to preempt a lot of this shit, but you were going to see, I was putting out the shout outs, baby. I was like, yo, shout out to the people who going to listen to this album after everybody else and listen to it and be like, I don't know what all the hype is about. Right? Because you're going to have that one person, man. You're going to have that person. Everybody else is enjoying this shit, and it's going to be that one person who's like, nah, I don't like it, B. Like, that ain't, it ain't even all that. Y'all hyped this up. Yeah, it ain't even all that. Y'all ruined it for me, right? I'm sometimes that person. This is why I know. Then there's a contention of the folks who are talking about, you know, like the woke folks, the super duper woke folks, like, yo man, y'all sitting up here talking about Jay-Z all day, nigga, meanwhile Trump out here like wilding, son, y'all ain't even paying attention, nigga, y'all distracted by this Jay-Z shit, nigga. Like, you know, you're gonna find that too. It's gonna always be that segment of the population. Then you got another segment of the population, and I saw this, it was like folks were talking about, some man, y'all celebrating this nigga, man, he used to be a drug dealer, yo. Like, now y'all talking about he dropping knowledge and all this other shit, man. We supposed to just excuse all this other shit that he used to do back in the day. And it was one of those things where I listen and I see people talking like that, and it makes me think of, like, folks who aren't comfortable with somebody growing up, especially when they're stuck in whatever position that they're in. And this happens to all of us on a personal level, like, even not even so much with Jay-Z, but, like, on a personal level, this happens to a lot of folks who are doing things in their life that they want to elevate themselves. They want to do something different. They want to be something different. They've come into some different type of understanding, and they want to live their life according to the new way that they understand it. And for a lot of folks who, you know, you may come up with, a lot of folks who you may have grown up with and loved and everything else, they may not necessarily understand these changes that are going on with you. And they'll feel slighted in some sort of way, especially if you're growing away from them and you're making them uncomfortable, if it makes it seem like they're comfortable with where they are and you aren't comfortable there anymore. You know, and sometimes that can kind of come off as you're being better than people. And it's not always about being better than people. It's like, yo, I'm just in a different space in my life now. I can't, like, this isn't for me anymore. And so it's interesting with that, because when I would see people talk about Jay-Z being a drug dealer, he used to be a drug dealer, he glorifies it, he talks about it and everything else. One of the things I always go back to was like, yo, If he's no longer doing that, is he not allowed to, is he not allowed to do something else? Right? Are we not allowed to grow beyond how fucked up we may have been at any point in our lives? Right? Can we do that? Because do we always have to be reminded that we weren't shit? I'm pretty sure, like, for those of you who listen to this podcast, man, there's some things I've said on the mic 5-6 years ago. You're like, yo, man, that's pretty fucked up. Like, yo, Span got that wrong right there. And if you, like, if you go back and you listen to some of that stuff, I would go back and be like, ooh, shit, I can't believe I said that. And it's weird, like, listening to folks try to pigeonhole you into who you used to be. You know what I mean? Like, especially, I guess I'm maybe sensitive to it now because I'm on the mic and I put these thoughts out here for the world to consume and everything else. And some people may listen to this and it might not be current for them. And then they'll hear me now and they're like, well, wait a minute, you said this then. Why are you saying this now? And, like, they want to hold you to that. And I think we do people a disservice when we don't allow them that room for growth. And so with 444, man, I've seen a lot of growth out of the man who's become Sean Carter, you know, like the father, the husband, the business mogul. There's a lot of growth with this album. And I think those of you who get a chance to listen to it, once you do, I think you may, you'll see the same things that I've seen as well with that, man, real talk. But we got an update on a story that I did the last time I was on the mic, right? And I think the last time I talked to you guys, man, we were talking about, there was this woman out of Charlotte, North Carolina. She was a Trump supporter, and she walked into a Starbucks with her Trump t-shirt on. I think we talked about this on the show last week. Now, it's funny, because you would have thought, like, after that incident, I would have been over with. Like, no, like, that, it was a funny story to me. I thought it should have been in blue blazes or whatever. It was a funny story. But that wasn't the end of it. There's a group of Charlotte area Republicans who felt like they had to take up the fight to Starbucks. And so I'm going to play this. I'm going to play this video and we're going to learn about these motherfuckers together. Check this out.
Sit-in at a Charlotte coffee house is getting national attention. Dozens of local Republicans staged the protest after a customer wearing a Donald Trump t-shirt said she was mocked by Starbucks workers. NBC Charlotte's Savannah Levins joins us live. So, Savannah, you met with some of those protesters tonight. What did they have to say?
That's right. Well, they were very glad that this was a peaceful sit-in over the weekend. It happened here at the Starbucks in Dilworth off of East Boulevard. There were about 50 supporters of President Trump who participated. They came here with just the hope of initiating positive conversation and discussion about the policy issues.
And she was just wearing a Trump t-shirt, just coming to get a cup of coffee and was, you know, ridiculed and mobbed.
A Charlotte woman says she was wearing a Donald Trump shirt when she ordered a coffee from this Starbucks a couple weeks ago. But she says on her cup, instead of her name, an employee had mockingly written, "Build a wall."
I didn't think it was the end of the world, but it's just one of, like, these little tiny pieces that they all add up to a much bigger problem.
Starbucks issued an apology to the customer, but this group wanted to make a statement.
We wanted to show that, you know, one, we're not going to be bullied. We're not going to be vilified or persecuted for our choice in who we choose to as our leader.
This weekend's support for that customer came in the form of dozens of coffee orders.
It was a positive environment.
Local supporters of President Trump swarmed the business over the weekend, placing orders and engaging everyone they could in what they hope was constructive conversation.
Let's all come together. Let's focus on the issues that matter.
A Starbucks corporate spokesperson says the cup joke was a poor judgment call and added they were actually pleased with the sit-in, saying, "This experience has served as a reminder of the power of human connection. We look forward to continued conversation."
It takes a bigger person to rise above it all and reach out and shake somebody's hand and, quite honestly, turn the other cheek.
That Starbucks spokesperson told me that corporate has spoken with employees at this location about this whole cup incident. They did not say, though, if anyone was fired. Reporting live tonight, I'm Savannah Levins. I'll send it back to you.
All right. Now, funny thing.
There obviously some kind of case there.
I didn't ask for that. Stop it. All right. Now, funny thing here. One, they staged a sit-in, right? Because someone wrote "build a wall" on a cup at Starbucks, which was one of the things that was like a campaign promise that Donald Trump put out there. Like, people were chanting this shit in Mexico. Like, what was that? Like, spring breakers were going to Cancun, Mexico, talking about build the wall. Yeah, eighth graders here in Michigan chanting this shit. The Mexican Americans here telling them about build the wall. All of that shit, right? It was a campaign promise by Donald Trump. They said it was mockingly put on the cup. How would you, can you decipher someone's tone on the cup when they just write it down? Did they like write it in big bold letters? Did they put like exclamation points on it and all this other shit? Like, how could you tell the tone of it when they were writing that down on the cup? Right? Secondly, you could tell that these people aren't used to boycotts at all or any sort of like effective protest. They went to the Starbucks. They went to the fucking Starbucks and they bought out the damn Starbucks, man. Like, they bought out the Starbucks. You could, they went and they placed orders, man. A whole bunch of Trump supporters went to the Starbucks and placed orders, right? Now, funny thing is, man, like, I kind of wish that they would, like, boycott the Span Report like that. Like, you know what? I say a bunch of dumb, I say a bunch of incendiary shit about Donald Trump all the time on this show. How about y'all come listen to me and then y'all like boycott by donating to the show? Like, show me how angry y'all are by boycotting to the Span Report right now, man. It's available on thespanreport.com. Go to the website, man. Donate as much as you like, as often as you like, and show me how much I got Donald Trump wrong. Do that. If that's the kind of protesting that they doing, man, oh my God, everybody need to come up. That's that they don't even know how to fucking protest. They want to be victims so bad, man. Like, they don't even know how to do it. And it's, and another interesting thing about this, too, is we should be able to turn the other cheek and be the bigger person. The person who's occupying the White House right now has no concept of that whatsoever. Like, not at all. He is not the person to be talking about, yo, we need to turn the other cheek. We need to be the bigger person. We need to reach out across the aisle. Donald Trump has done none of that shit since he's been occupying the White House. Absolutely none of it. So it's amazing to watch these people who want to be victims, who say, like, we can't let this go. We can't let this stand. Someone said build a wall on a Starbucks cup. And now we have to show that we're not going to be bullied. And we show that by going to the place that was being bad to us and we spend a lot of money with them. The fuck is wrong with these people? It's funny. It's funny. I'm just saying, like, it's crazy to me too, man. Like, I don't understand it. I don't think a lot of folks understand it, but it is what it is. When it comes to Donald Trump, man, a lot of this shit just doesn't make sense. Like, like his voters, what they stand for, what they even mean. Like, a lot of it just doesn't make sense, man. Real talk. Now, it's time for some of our segments, man. I've been talking for a little bit. Got to get to the segments. And our first segment is Blue Blazes.
Blazes is going on out here.
Uh-oh. Damn it, I keep forgetting to turn it up. We're going to do that one more time.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
All right. Now, our first story in Blue Blazes, it actually has to do with guns, man. Guns. So there was a story of this this dude who thought it would be a good idea to go on YouTube and get shot by his girlfriend. Let his girlfriend shoot him. And he's gonna do it for the YouTube. So let me pull this video up. I thought I had this saved here. Let me see if I can pull this up. Just a second, folks. All right, here we go. A woman was asked to shoot her boyfriend for YouTube fame, tweeted before a horrifying video. Me and Pedro are probably going to shoot one of the most dangerous videos ever, wrote Ms. Perez. His idea, not mine. Now, soon after Ms. Perez's boyfriend, Pedro Ruiz, will be shot dead on video in an apparent attempt to become famous. He became famous in the wrong fucking way for being stupid. For the video, Mr. Ruiz held a heavy book to his chest. The two then attempted to see if the book would block a bullet from a Desert Eagle handgun that was fired at it. But the bullet went straight through the book and hit Mr. Ruiz, killing him. Now, I'm not sure if you guys, you know, how many of you guys are familiar with a Desert Eagle handgun. You may have seen them in like movies like what was that movie where like they were bending bullets and shit. Angelina Jolie was making it look real fucking easy swinging that gun around. Desert Eagles are pretty fucking big handguns, man. A lot of folks call them hand cannons. They're really fucking big. I think you can get them in like a 44 caliber round. And they're pretty fucking powerful, dude. Like, that's not a chump round. Like, that's one of those guns where you don't want to try to shoot that shit one-handed. You don't want to, like, play around with it. And they decided to just take a book, put it in front of somebody, and he thought he was going to stop a Desert Eagle round. Yeah. Everybody don't need to have guns, B. And this is why. This is why. It says, further says in this article, it says the risk of such videos have been led to fakes being generated. YouTube is full of videos that claim to show pranks going wrong and ending with people being threatened with guns or hurting themselves, though most appear to be acted. The tweet announcing the stunt, in which Maris Perez called it one of the most dangerous videos ever, has since been retweeted more than 2,000 times. Her account has only 2,500 followers, and her posts tend to be shared only one or two times. That added interest has also brought with it almost 1,500 replies. Those are a mix of sympathetic and critical, with many people taking Ms. Perez to task over the video. Now, yes, they should be taking the task over the video. It was a stupid fucking attempt to get famous on YouTube. There's so many people out here who are so, like, thirsty for a little bit of fame. It's not that deep. The YouTube likes, the Facebook likes, the retweets, the likes on Twitter, like, it's not that deep to the point where you should be risking your life by taking a fucking Desert Eagle handgun to the chest because you want to see if it'll stop a bullet. You know how you can see if it'll stop a bullet? You don't have to stand in front of the motherfucker. You can just have a book up there on a platform and shoot at the book with no targets behind it. That would have told you whether or not it was actually, like, if a Desert Eagle can actually penetrate the book. You didn't have to stand behind the book, dumbass. So, yeah, like, as someone who, like, carries a gun and stuff like that, like, yo, that's fucking stupid. And it's stupid shit like that, that, you know, it lends to arguments about folks not needing to have guns, what guns are needed and which ones aren't and everything else. Like, and who should have access to them? This is the case of someone who should not have had access to a firearm. They were stupid. They were misguided. They were, both of those. They were both of those. So, yeah, that happened. Now, another thing happened over in the Blue Blazers, man. There was a story of a fighter, MMA fighter, man, who, she shit herself in the ring, bruh. She got the shit beat out of her. Now, I don't say that, like, you know, lightly. You know what I'm saying? Like, this was a woman who's a professional fighter. This isn't like on some domestic abuse kind of shit. This is a woman who's a professional fighter. She was in a UFC fight, and her name is Justine Kish. And she fought valiantly as she dropped a decision to Felice Herring at the main card of UFC Oklahoma City. She somehow survived this deep choke, which had former champion Dominic Cruz raving about her toughness and explosiveness from the UFC commentary booth. After defending the submission, the 29-year-old was still in a bad position, like she was doing throughout the fight. Kish exploded to get out of a bad spot. Unfortunately, that wasn't the only thing that got out. Shortly after, many from social media began to notice some coloration on the mat. Even media in attendance did their duty to confirm things. The staff tried to clean it up a little, and the two remaining fights continued. On the very next bout, former UFC champion Johnny Hendricks was knocked out right by those stains. Now, I would not have wanted, like, been in that ring after there was, like, shit stains all over the floor. Like, really, like, I don't, you're stepping in that. Like, a lot of folks don't even want shit on their shoes when they walk into someone's grass. And here you are, you about to lay your face or your back or your stomach or your feet all over this shit that was, like, on the ring, bruh. Now, it makes me think, one of the things about, like, somebody getting the shit beat out of them is, like, one of those things, like, you don't necessarily think that can happen literally, but here's one of the instances where it happened literally. And it also makes me think back to a story my grandmother told me about my Uncle Ronnie, man. Like, she told me this story, man, and I thought she was bullshitting. But my Uncle Ronnie said something to my grandfather one time, and my grandfather whooped his ass to the point where Uncle Ronnie shit himself. Now, we look at that now, like, that was that as damn, that's fucked up. That's abuse. That was like, you know, the modus operandi back in like the 60s and shit, where people like whoop their kids and whatnot. But the actual thought of somebody whooping somebody or getting the shit beat out of them takes on a whole new meaning when you talk about this now, right? So yeah, man, that was what in blue blazes, man? What in the fuck is going on?
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right, now we got another story, man. We got something else that we need to talk about, man. And it's been a little while since we did this, but it's a little bit more sexier.
Yeah, baby, it's sexy time with Mr. Span.
All right. Now, this story here comes out of, where did I get this story from? This story comes out of Vox.com, right? And it's the story about Americans lying about their sexual desires, right? We're not being honest with who we are, man, and what we want and how we want it. No, we're not. And Google is the source, man. Google knows everything. Everybody like kind of hits Google up for a little bit of everything. Google has like a knowledge graph of pretty much what people are thinking and what they want and how they want it and all these other things, because yo, you search for it, right? So this story is actually an interview. It says this guy named Seth Stevens Davidowitz, author of Everybody Lies, a new book that uses data on America's Google habits as an insight into our national consciousness. It says among other things, Stephens Davidowitz data suggests that there are more gay men in the closet than we think, that many men prefer overweight women to skinny women but are afraid to act on it, that married women are disproportionately worried their husband is gay, that a lot of straight women watch lesbian porn, and that porn featuring violence against women is more popular among men than women. Now, interesting findings, right? But I'm almost not surprised. And the reason I say that, man, like, especially when it comes to, say, for instance, men's preference for overweight women and not necessarily acting on it. I would go so far as to say a lot of them really are acting on it. They're just not trying to be public with it. You know, like, they have no problems with being with a larger woman, but they don't want anybody else to know that they like being with a larger woman. And there's nothing wrong with being with a larger woman. Like, there's nothing wrong with being with a woman, period. There's nothing wrong with being with anybody. Let's just put it like that. But there's a perception, there's this bravado that a lot of brothers put out, man. Like, you hear this shit all the time, nigga. All I fuck with is dimes, nigga. Like, nigga, everybody I fuck with, nigga. I ain't got no ones on my list, nigga. All dimes, nigga. All dimes. That's all I fuck with. And then people, you know, be like, all right, bro, whatever you say. And we don't believe him. We know he woofing. We know he talking shit. It's a whole lot of people who are out here like that, man. They're projecting something that they're not really, they're projecting something to everyone else. And after a while, it becomes one of those things where you're just like, you know what, man? That nigga woofing, right? The same thing with, kind of reminds me of like, remember Tropic Thunder? Al Pacino in Tropic Thunder, he was like, you know, booty sweat and a bust a nut and all this other shit. He loved a pussy and everything else. And then you find out later in the movie that, yo, Al Pacino was really gay and he was in love with Lance Bass. Right? Like, there's a whole lot of people who put out these personas of who they are and they want to project these things, but behind closed doors is something completely different. So I'm not surprised by any of this. Like, I'm not surprised by women possibly having lesbian fantasies. I'm not surprised by that. I'm not surprised that there are a lot of, well, I will say I am surprised about the violence part. Out of all of the stuff we're talking about now, I'm surprised about the violence part, where they talk about women liking porn that features violence against them. That kind of threw me for a loop right there. Like, you know, I guess like in there there are certain fantasies, like folks like, I know, like being choked or like being smacked on the ass or whatever, you know, those sort of things I know like turn women on to a certain degree, depending on the woman you're with. But then there are others, like there's another subgenre of porn, like that ghetto gagger shit, man, like that sort of stuff, where like you just basically abusing a woman, like trying to choke her on a dick and make her throw up on your dick and shit. Like that's, I don't know, like I don't get down like that. I don't get it, but obviously there's a market for it. There are people who are into that, women and men. But the thing that's the overarching theme here is like, yo, we, America as a country is sexually repressed, man. And it manifests itself in ways where, like, you know, you want certain things in the bedroom. You're not free enough to let folks know how you like your sex. Right? Like, you're not free, like, and it's not so much that you have to broadcast it, but it's like, you can't be honest. Like, if people right now, like, they were talking about there's a lot of women who suspect that their husbands may be gay, like, they aren't being honest with their partners even. Everybody's hiding something. Like, everybody has these things that they don't want the world to know about for fear of judgment. We talked about Jay-Z's mom coming out as lesbian. There's a lot of it was there's fear of judgment. There's fear of, you know, being shunned, fear of being mocked, fear of being pushed out of your social circle. There's a lot of fears that come with you being who you are sometimes. I think a lot of times we run into a whole lot of folks and everybody's putting on an air to some degree. So it's interesting, man. I'll say the least. I'll say that. It's interesting that, like, so many people feel the need, even when we call it, like, we live in a time where a lot of folks are being sexually liberated and things like that, and they're being open and honest about who they are. There's a large segment of the population, a large set of Americans, who still are regressed in the sense that they can't be open and honest about who they are and what they want sexually. So, yeah, man, check that article out. It's on Vox.com, man. Real interesting. It's an interview. It's kind of long, and I didn't want to read all the way through that interview, but you can go to Vox.com and check that interview out for yourself, man. Like, Americans are lying about how they want their sex, man. Now, you know what? I call this, look, I'm about to kind of deviate from the script here, because this episode is called I Got You Some Weed, and I almost forgot. I almost forgot to tell y'all the story about what spawned the name of this episode, right? So I was at work earlier in the week, right? And of course, you guys know, like, I work in utilities, and I'm letting this lady know that we have to do some work on her home to renew her gas service and whatnot. And I went into her home, man, this older white lady, well-to-do area, man, nice large home, like big ass house, right? 5 bedrooms, like 2 furnaces, 2 hot water tank size homes. I'll just put it to you like that. Not everybody rocks like that. But I'm in her home and I'm telling her, you know, we're going to be in the neighborhood. We'll probably be on your block tomorrow. We'll be here all day pretty much. And I just need to know if someone's going to be home so that we can get the work done. And she's like, okay, cool. You know, she's letting me know that I can do the work, but I'm getting ahead of myself. When she first let me into the house, she closes the door. She closes the door and she says, they took my dog away from me. I'm like, what? They took my dog away from me. And she's telling me this story about the Humane Society taking away her dog. She's an older woman. She lives alone. And the Humane Society took the dog away because the dog bit someone while she was out walking him. And he was a rescue dog and they had to take him back. And I'm like, okay. I'm trying to be as courteous as possible while also trying to get work done, because this is a business visit. This isn't a personal call. And, you know, I sympathize. You know, my dog's a rescue dog. I couldn't imagine what life would have been for my dog if he couldn't live with us anymore. You know, just trying to personalize it to a certain degree. And so I finally get her off of that. And she's telling me, yo, she's going to be home tomorrow. We can come through and get the work done. And she just needs to know what time we're going to come. And I'm like, okay, we'll be here about 9:30 tomorrow morning. She's like, okay, cool. Let me write this down in my calendar and I'll be home. And you should knock on my door around 9:30. And I said, all right, cool. And I leave and we come back the next day. And when we came back the next day, there was this lady who walked up to me and she says, well, when are you guys coming down to the house on the corner? And I said, well, I spoke with a woman there yesterday, told her we'd be there by 9:30. Excuse me. And there was this woman was basically this lady's caregiver. What I did not know was that this woman was suffering from dementia. And it kind of threw me because she was so lucid, right? Like I have very limited experience with someone with dementia. She was very lucid when I spoke with her. She was attentive. There was the story about the dog and everything, and I was sympathizing with it, but I had no clue about the dementia part. So basically her caregiver's like, yeah, she has dementia. Someone else needs to be in the home with her while you guys are working, just to make sure that everything's on the up and up. And I said, you know what? That's fine. I would prefer someone be there now knowing her condition. And so right as I'm getting ready to walk away, the lady whose home I'm getting ready to work on, she walks up to me and she pulls me down because I'm a little taller than her. She says, I got you some weed. Right? And I laugh it off. At first, I'm like, what the fuck makes this? Like, okay, she has dementia. She has dementia. But I was laughing, but low-key offended at the same fucking time. Like, wait a minute, God damn it. What makes this lady think I would want some weed? Is it because I'm black? You know what I mean? Like, like, what makes her think that I would want weed? And so I get started on working on her house, and I'm in the basement. I'm working, and I'm up on a stepladder trying to, like, put some pipe together. And she, like, kind of sneaks up behind me and, like, tickles my ribs while I'm up on the ladder and shit. Really fucked up. She's like, did you find the weed? Right? Like, no. No, lady, I didn't find any fucking weed. Again, she has dementia. I'm trying to be conscious of this. But this happened over and over and over again throughout the day. Did you find the weed? I got some really good stuff. It's really good. I smoke it all the time. And it became a thing all day. I wasn't the only one who she offered weed to. There was another guy on the crew, another black guy. She offered him weed also. The white dudes on the crew, not so much. I don't think she talked to them. I don't think she offered them weed. That's why I think she was racist. But the question I got for you guys is this. Can I be mad at her for, like, offering me weed all day and only offering weed to the brothers? Can I also be mad at this woman for knowing that she has dementia also? Is it wrong that I'm a little offended with that? Like, yo, and I don't even smoke. I don't even give off the vibe that I smoke. Like, but she kept offering me weed and talking about how good the weed was. And like, yo, did you find the weed? I got some really good stuff. I smoke it all the time. Like, she was letting me in on a fucking secret or something. So yeah, man, I'm gonna leave that as, that's gonna be like the poll question, man. Am I wrong for being mad at this dementia lady offering me weed while I was at the job, man? Yeah, y'all, I'm gonna leave that as a poll question. She got me some weed, y'all. She got me some weed. Now, yeah, I totally deviated from what the fuck I was supposed to be talking about right now. But yeah, man, so getting back on with the rest of the show. Donald Trump, man, is out here wilding, right? He's out here wilding out, man. Donald Trump is out here tweeting about show host on MSNBC and whatnot, man. Mika Brzezinski of the Morning Joe. He basically, you know, Donald Trump gets out here and he says, look, I hear they, you know, they something about Morning Joe wanted to be close with him and he told them no. And he made references to Mika Brzezinski's looks, where he talked about she had just come from a facelift and her face was bleeding from the facelift. And like, they were trying to be with me for like 3 days. And now all of a sudden they like disparaging me all over TV. Like, I'm getting all this bad coverage and they wanted me to kill this story. And I said, no. And the interesting thing about this and worlds are about to collide here. Donald Trump was actually telling the truth. Donald Trump is out here telling the truth about Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough. Now, for those of you who have been paying attention to like the presidential election and everything else, man, you watch cable news, sometimes you watch MSNBC in the morning and, you know, the Morning Joe show is on. And I can remember back in 2016, man, when Donald Trump would call into the Morning Joe show and they were real fucking chummy with Donald Trump. Like, they were one of the few shows on cable news outside of Fox News who was giving Donald Trump favorable coverage. They were taking up for Donald Trump. They were saying people should take Donald Trump seriously. And they were, you know, kind of carrying his water, man, like giving him a place on what some would call the liberal media outlet in MSNBC, and giving him a foothold there where, like, folks were looking at him as an alternative to Hillary Clinton and or the alternative to Bernie Sanders, because they couldn't vote for Bernie Sanders. And like, well, you know what? Fuck it. I'll vote for Donald Trump. I won't vote for Hillary Clinton. And they would go on MSNBC and hear Donald Trump speaking to them. Those white working class voters who would typically vote Democratic, but they saw something about Donald Trump that they like, right? Morning Joe, Mika Brzezinski, Joe Scarborough, they were giving him cover for most of that campaign, right? They came, like, it was frustrating for a lot of folks, especially those of us who would be considered left leaning. It was frustrating to watch them kind of like treat him with kid gloves and not hold him accountable. It's one of the reasons, like, they would allow him to just call in on the show. He would, if he was going to be a guest on people's shows, like, he just call in over the phone, like, yeah. They were real chummy with him. It was like, yo, he's part of the club, right? And Joe Scarborough talked about him being familiar and being like friends with Donald Trump for over 10 years. And it showed in their coverage of Donald Trump. So it's interesting that, you know, since Trump has become, you know, the occupier of the White House, that, you know, now Morning Joe, they get their bones off of talking shit about Donald Trump, as everyone else does, you know. But the thing about Morning Joe is, I don't believe you. I don't believe y'all. It became kind of like politically expedient for them to kind of rail against Donald Trump afterwards. I don't know what the calculus was behind it, right? Donald Trump has been the same asshole motherfucker he's always been. And it's interesting that, like, now that, you know, he's aiming his fire at them, that now they're worried about his mental health. They're worried about his well-being. They're worried about how he projects to the world. They're worried about the office of president of the United States. They're worried about how the prestige of the office is now being tarnished because Donald Trump is there. Like, all of these things, man. But they had no problem being chummy with this motherfucker while the thought of him being president was becoming realer and realer every day when that campaign was going on. They were helping to carry water for Donald Trump. So there's that part of it. Now, the other part of it is this, is like, yo, for all of the pig-headed shit that Donald Trump has been saying over the years, like, yeah, he spoke out about Mika Brzezinski, but this isn't the first time. As if we didn't hear him say he grabs women by the pussy during the campaign. As if we didn't hear how he talked about he was going to date a 10-year-old in 10 years. Like, she's 10 years old. In 10 years, I'm going to be dating her. As if we didn't hear him talk about inspecting beauty pageants and going in to go check out these girls while they were in the dressing rooms, barely dressed. He's going to inspect to make sure that everything's all right. Sound like a dirty-ass fucking old man. As if we didn't hear Donald Trump say, like he sees a woman, he's attracted to beautiful, he just starts kissing them. As if we... Like, we've had plenty of different instances of Donald Trump being an asshole. This isn't the first time. It's no different than what we've been seeing the last 2 years as far as his political career has been going on. But then when you think about him running the Miss America pageant, when you think about the Central Park Five, when you think about the housing discrimination lawsuits that's been going on with Donald Trump, these people who have been chummy with this motherfucker all of a sudden now because he's aiming his fire at them, now they're victims. And I ain't buying it. Now, I just said worlds are going to collide, because now I sound like, think about this, man. As much as I hate Donald fucking Trump, I sound like I'm defending this asshole, right? You know how much I hate Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough right now for this? To where, like, I'm on my show speaking of Donald Trump speaking the truth about some shit. Now, there's this whole thing of, you know, they said that, well, members of the Trump organization or administration or whatever were threatening them with a compromising story to be published in the National Enquirer. And if they would pull back on the negative coverage and if they would apologize to Donald Trump, they wouldn't run the story. Now, what's interesting is, why didn't this come out sooner? This supposedly happened months ago. Why didn't this come out sooner? Why weren't you talking about this when it happened? that a president of the United States is openly soliciting favorable coverage to the point of blackmail from cable news hosts. That he's trying to blackmail the people in the press to give him favorable coverage. This should have came out months ago. And it's interesting, too, that Donald Trump's wife, Melania Trump, says that her platform as first lady is going to be cyberbullying. The irony of that is so fucking thick. So thick. Like, do you know who your husband is, right? You do see what the fuck he's out here doing on the daily. You do see what he's done on news on the daily. How's that fucking, how's that plan working out? Like, how's that cyberbullying platform working out? Have we seen any, like, real concrete advantages to it? Like, have we seen him implement any kind of programs to forward this message of anti-bullying? Is Donald Trump stepping on that every time he goes out there and gets on Twitter? So, yeah, man, it's one of those things, man, like, with you get what you... We got the dude in the White House that we deserve. Like, at the end of the day, we pretty much got what we deserve. So many people on the left were so complacent, so unrealistic in their expectations of someone who should be president, where you almost have to be perfect for them. Well, like, you had a lot of Bernie folks who were like, yo, Hillary, I can't do Hillary. I don't like her policies. Meanwhile, Bernie and Hillary voted together like 93% of the time. There wasn't really a whole lot of daylight between the two of them. So, yeah, man, that happened this week. Donald Trump being Donald Trump. The fuck, right? Now, it's time for our ass hat of the week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And our ass hat of the week this week is none other than the fucking NRA, right? So, full disclosure, your man Span at one point was a card-carrying member of the National Rifle Association, man. And one of the reasons why I joined the NRA, it was shortly after I was arrested in Chicago for the gun charge, where the Chicago police pulled me over. And you know, if you listen to this podcast, you've heard the story. Like, I was in Chicago driving and police pulled me over looking for my gun. Gun's not in the car with me. I left it in my luggage in my grandmother's home, told the police where it was at. They went and got it, arrested me. And, yeah, that happened 6 years ago this month. That happened. Right. So I joined the NRA. Because there was an arm of the NRA, I think it was some sort of the defense organization, where, you know, they would provide attorneys, they would provide funding for attorneys so that you could fight gun charges, right? And that was one of the reasons why I joined the NRA. It was also around the time where the NRA was fighting the Chicago handgun ban, right? There's a case that was brought before the Supreme Court. It was Otis McDonald versus the city of Chicago, and it was fighting the city of Chicago's handgun ban. Otis McDonald was an older man. It was an older black gentleman who wanted to have a handgun in his home to defend it, but the city ordinance provided that he could not have a handgun. The only guns he was permitted to have was a long rifle. And he said that, like, a long rifle for someone in his position and his condition was a little unwieldy for him. He would much prefer to have a handgun in his home. And so the NRA got behind Otis McDonald, and Otis McDonald, that case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they won. City of Chicago's handgun ban was deemed unconstitutional, and now the citizens of the city of Chicago can buy handguns, right? Now, one of the reasons why it's interesting, and I like, as I look back on a whole lot of these were things that I was missing when I was a member of the NRA, man. As much as, like, I am still someone who believes in the Second Amendment and someone who exercises that amendment daily. But the NRA's purpose isn't necessarily to fight for civil rights of gun owners. It is to sell guns. And one of the reasons I didn't catch this at the time, I was missing it completely when I was a member and when all these things were going on. I was missing it completely. But The whole thing with Otis McDonald was to be able to sell guns. If they were able to get the handgun ban deemed unconstitutional in Chicago, then guess what? There's a whole bunch of people in Chicago that are go buy guns. Handguns in particular. Now the legal people who've been wanting to buy handguns can go out and do it. And the gun manufacturers benefit, right? But then the story of Philando Castile comes up, who's doing it the right way, who's licensed to carry, who's, you know, who gets killed by the state, by the police, for carrying a concealed weapon, and trying to exercise that right the right way. And the NRA was silent on it, didn't say a motherfucking thing about it. And one of the things about this was, I've even seen NRA members say, why would the NRA say anything? Why should they say anything? Was Philando Castile even a member? And he wasn't. But that's not the point. Otis McDonald was not a member of the NRA either when the NRA decided that they wanted to take up his case all the way up to the fucking Supreme Court. They didn't have any problem speaking up on behalf of a black man when it was going to further their agenda of having sold more guns. Had no problem speaking up then. The silence now is deafening, because at the end of the day, if it's really about a civil rights organization, civil rights and the rights of someone's, if someone's Second Amendment right is being violated, as we all saw on video, and the NRA says nothing, then it's really not about the civil rights of Americans. It's a gun lobby. It's about selling more guns, right? So what happened, and why am I talking about the NRA today? The reason I'm talking about the NRA today is because the NRA put out this video with Dana Loesch, who's a right-wing pundit. I think she has a show on Fox News. But hold on, let me see if I can pull this up. I'm sorry, just a second. All right, so the NRA puts out this ad, and it's a minute long, and it has Dana Loesch in it, and here it is. I'm going to just go ahead and play this.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
All right. Now, a couple questions that I got is, who is this mysterious they that they're talking about? Who are they? They use their ex-president. They use their Hollywood stars. They use their media. Who is the cabal of they? Who are they? Who is she referring to? Right? Another thing, like, she talks about, they call you homophobic, they call you racist, they call you Islamophobic. Excuse me. All to get you all ginned up. They get these people ginned up. And now all of a sudden, it's interesting. This is an interesting turn of events, considering all of a sudden, the people who are on the left, the people who Donald Trump supporters call snowflakes, the people whom Donald Trump supporters and a lot of people on the right would mock for needing safe spaces, all of a sudden, these same people are now unhinged, violent, need-to-be-checked people. How did that turn of events happen? How did all of a sudden those with the guns need protecting from the snowflakes, from the safe place needing people? How did that happen? How did we get here? You know what happened? This is what happened. For a lot of years, man, For the entire presidency of Barack Obama, the NRA was selling a lot of people on the idea that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are out to take your guns away from you. I used to get this shit in the mail all the time, and it was basically solicitations for donations. The NRA has been operating as a scare, a propaganda arm for the Republican Party for a long time. And like I said, I saw this and just I would throw those shits in the trash. Like I wouldn't even fucking like I wouldn't even like after I read it, I'd throw it in the trash. I never donated money to the NRA. I was simply a member. And I never really got any benefits from it. The only thing I think I benefited from, I got this flashlight from the NRA. Yeah, I got this flashlight with my membership 1 year. That's it. $215 in 7 years, and that's all I got with this funky ass flashlight, right? So the NRA puts this ad out, and they're trying to convince people that those who are fighting for civil rights, those who are fighting for the marginalized people in America, gays, blacks, Muslims, Hispanics, like they're trying to convince you that they need protection from you. They're trying to demonize you. And so they sold this idea that Barack Obama was trying to take your guns away. Hillary Clinton was trying to take your guns away. We went through 8 years of Barack Obama. And guess what? Everybody that had their guns before still got them. Hillary Clinton is not about to be president. You know what happened to gun sales after the scare that Barack Obama was going to take away your guns and Hillary Clinton is about to be president and she's going to try to take up the mantle to take away your guns? You know what happened? Nobody was buying guns. Nobody was buying guns. So the play here is that we got to get these people scared some more. We got to get these people scared again. We have to give them a new villain to fight. And in order to get them this new villain to fight, we got to demonize everybody who does not think like us. We got to make sure that we get all of these people who think that they're threatened by the latte sipping, safe place needing snowflakes. We got to protect ourselves from them. You know, we just saw Donald Trump supporters going to a Starbucks to buy coffee to protest what happened to a Donald Trump supporter because they simply wrote "build a wall" on a fucking cup. But this particular ad, man, the reason, and this is the reason why the NRA is the asset of the week this week. This particular ad is so fucking over the top. It's so far gone that you can no longer, you can only look at it as if it's right wing, racist, violence inducing propaganda. There's no other way to look at it. No other way to look at it. And as a person who used to be a member of the NRA, I will say this. There's a lot of people who simply want to exercise their right to the Second Amendment, right? I was one of those people who was an NRA member. I'm not proud of it. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, there was a whole lot of things about the NRA that I just simply wasn't. I was given a blind eye to. But when you're aware of what's going the fuck on, you got like when you know better, you do better. And God damn it, I've not renewed my membership. I've never donated to the NRA. I am ashamed that I was ever affiliated with the motherfucking NRA. It's sickening to a lot of gun owners. I'll say that. It's sickening to a lot of gun owners because that's not necessarily the message that a lot of gun owners are out here about. And for them to put this, like they can put this shit out. They can talk about your need to, like they can talk about the protest at airports and shutting down of freeways. And they can talk about what some would deem riots after extrajudicial killings by the police officers across this country. They can talk about that, but they couldn't say a word about Philando Castile's rights being violated by that cop. They couldn't say shit. And that's the galling part. That's the galling part. And that's why the NRA are the asshats of the week right here on the Span Report.
Yo, we got got some hats now, motherfuckers.
But we do have a champ.
The champ is here. 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 The champ is here.
All right, today's champ of the week this week here on the Spam Report podcast is none other than Serena Williams, man. And the reason that Serena Williams is the champ of the week here, man, is, yo, man, she got that Vanity Fair magazine cover. I think she's like 6 or 7 months pregnant now. She was nude in the on the cover, and it was very tastefully done. She's flawless on the damn cover. And two things. It's the way she handles herself. We saw when Beyonce was pregnant, when she announced her twins, the amount of people who tried to shame Beyonce because of the way that she looked while being pregnant with twins, who tried to shame her for publicizing it in the way that she did, right? And Serena Williams is taking a page out of the Beyonce playbook by, you know, like not even just taking a page out, but like, yo, she's happy in the fact that she's about to become a mom, and she's celebrating the fact that she's about to become a mom. And this magazine is celebrating her because she's about to become a mom. Outside of the phenomenal athlete, one of the greatest of all time to ever do it, like, they're celebrating this woman. And of course it comes with the criticisms of the same things that have happened with Beyonce. How dare she go out here and look perfect while she's pregnant with this baby? How dare she go out here and flaunt her body? And my body doesn't look like that. How dare she do this? And then there's the contingent of dudes, white dudes in particular, who would try to knock Serena Williams down by saying that she would be 700th if she just played in a regular circuit that was mixed with men and women. Right? John McEnroe, I believe it was. John McEnroe has a history of putting his foot in his fucking mouth, saying some real sly, fucked up shit. And you know what Serena Williams did, basically, in a tweet? She just kind of told him, like, yo, man, keep my name out your mouth. She didn't go extra. She didn't go extra hard, man. Like, yo, man, at the end of the day, keep my name out your mouth. Because let's be honest, man, Serena Williams' resume speaks for its fucking self. Only one person, I think, in history has more Grand Slam titles than Serena Williams does. Serena Williams also, her and her sister have the most Grand Slam doubles titles in history. Long way from being a little girl in Compton, man. And the way she's handled herself and the way she's grown as a woman and the way she's shown herself to be in situations like these is admirable, and I like it. And that's why Serena Williams is the champ of the week this week here on the Spam Report podcast, man, real talk. But it's getting late, man. I didn't realize how late this was. It's 11:22 right now, and I got to get ready to go to work tomorrow. Ain't that some shit? 4th of July is Tuesday. I got to go to work Monday, be off again Tuesday. It don't make a lot of sense, but it is what it is. But here's what's going to happen. I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Spam Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard, man. Go ahead, hit me up at the hotline, area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I'll play them on the show, respond in kind. And that number again is 313-288-0485. Also, hit me up on the email. My name on there in the email. I'm sorry. It's feedback@thespamreport.com. That's feedback@thespamreport.com. Leave me those emails. Of course, I'll play those emails here live on the show. I'll read them, not play them, and respond, man. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span, so go ahead and follow me there. Also, like the Mr. Span fan page on Facebook. You'll get the same thing I put on Facebook and Twitter right there on the Mr. Span fan page. Go ahead and do that. iTunes and on Stitcher reviews, 5 stars preferably. Those get read, man, right here on the show. You can go ahead and leave those 5-star reviews. Let everybody know that you're fucking with us over here at the Spam Report Podcast, man. Let your voice be heard in that way. Also, go to www.thespamreport.com. Everything's available there. The podcasts are available there. Videos available there. The polls are there. You can leave comments there. You can leave donations there. Everything, man. You can buy t-shirts there. Everything is available at thespamreport.com. Go there for your Span Report needs, man. Real talk. I got to get out of here. I appreciate you guys listening. Shout out to Jackie Harper in the chat room. Appreciate you being here live. And I'm going to talk to you guys again soon later, man. But until next time, fam, peace.